We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Deuce McAllister here, and I'm going to go straight to the phone lines. Patrick from Metairie wants to talk a little SEC football. Patrick, how you doing?
Doing good, guys. Hey, how are y'all?
Doing well.
Hey, Patrick.
Good. Hey, yeah, just about the SEC season, you know, just looking at it, you know, and looking at the West in particular, I don't think there's any easy out. Just when you look at all the teams in this division, you know, Texas A&M's getting better because they have a national championship winning coach now in Jimbo Fisher. Arkansas is just going to get better, I think, with Chad Morris. Of course, you've got Alabama. You've got Auburn with a loaded team coming back with Jarrett Stidham.
Patrick, I always look at which team has a returning quarterback. Which team has a returning quarterback that has some skins in the SEC?
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree. And, when you talk about that, Deuce, I mean, Alabama returns, they have Tua and they have Jalen Hurts, you know. So, I mean, they have two guys who they feel comfortable putting in the game. Auburn has Jarrett Stidham coming back, who had a very good year last year.
Right.
I think Ole Miss is going to be dangerous with Matt Luke. You know, they have I like Jordan Tayamu, their quarterback. You know, he played very well for them down the stretch. Of course, Mississippi State, they have Nick Fitzgerald coming back. So I think I don't know about you guys. I think just looking at this division, though, I think you could be a 7-5 team, and you could still be a pretty darn good team in this division, I think.
It depends on which team is 7-5.
Right.
Yeah, and Patrick, do you look at, and obviously I'm just speculating, you're an LSU fan. So when you say 7-5, and then you win a bowl game, and then you're 8-5, I think that'd be enough. I don't know. I want your take on this. That it'd be enough to be maybe optimistic going forward. It does depend how you win or lose, but going forward, considering the recruiting class and where they're at for the 2019 season, do you take that approach like it's like kind of stepping stones or a building block for the future beyond 2018? Or what is your take on that?
Well, you know, Bobby, I mean, I think to me, of course, I think it really depends on how those games play out. You know, if those are some close losses and, they're the type of games that could go either way, then, I think that's understandable. As far as LSU in particular, you look at LSU, they get Alabama and Georgia at home. If you can split those two games somehow, I think the LSU front seven,
right.
Everyone's talking about Alabama and Georgia going into the year, but I think that LSU front seven on defense is going to be as good as anybody, you know, with Devin White and Rashard Lawrence and all those guys.
The question I have for you, though, what happens when they spread you out? Because both of those, like you said, both of those quarterbacks we know can throw the football. So what happens when they spread you out?
Right. It's definitely going to be interesting, Deuce. As far as LSU expectations, I think if they can get to 8-4 or 9-3, you know, if their losses are close and they're competitive, and
I think it'd be outstanding. Are you
yeah.
right now considering expectations? If LSU's 9-3, considering that people have them the over and under at 7 games, if they're 9-3, Deuce. And then you can get the double-digit wins. You win a bowl game at 10 because, to me, it kind of went downhill. And as far as people being discouraged, and it doesn't matter how you win or lose, how LSU lost the bowl game to the Fighting Irish. How they lost it, Notre Dame was like, what?
Yeah,
didn't give the ball to Darius Geis, and we're kicking, field goals, which you shouldn't make. I mean, you should have a kicker. that whether it's a glorified extra point or not, you should be able to get points.
Well, I think
that was a thorn in the side with LSU, how they lost that bowl game to Notre Dame.
No doubt. Patrick, what else you got for us before we let you go?
I guess overall, guys, I guess my point is I think the margin for error is going to be very slim in this division. And, you know, I think legitimately you can, you know, if you're an Ole Miss, if you're a Texas A&M, you know, if you're a 7-5 type of team, and, I think a lot of these games are going to be competitive. And I think even if you're a 7-5 type of team in this division this year, I think you could still be a legitimately very good team that could be an 8-9-10 win team in maybe some other conference.
So, Patrick, before we let you go, Joe Burrow, what is your take on the quarterback situation, Miles Brennan, Joe Burrow? Because what I've heard behind the scenes is that Joe Burrow could be a Peyton Manning type player. Yeah. That he's like a coach on the field.
Don't go that far now, Bobby.
No, dudes, that's what I heard. I'm just telling you. Okay, I'm just telling you. He is at that level where all of a sudden he can make a difference in 2 or 3 more wins. Because, dudes, you know how critical that is? All of a sudden you could be a 7-5 team and maybe you winning 9 or 10 because of the quarterback and his decision-making.
Yeah, Bobby, yeah, I mean, that's a very valid point. And LSU, I think this is as deep and as talented at the wide receiver position that they are going to be in several years, I think. You know, I think they're very high on a lot of the wide receivers that they have. If they can just have someone who can get them the ball. And watching Miles Brennan last year, I mean, he's 190 pounds soaking wet, you know.
He looks like a basketball player to me.
Right.
He looks like Jared Goff's little brother. He has that same look.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think just physically, if they had to rely on Miles Brennan, it really would have been tough. And so I think to get a guy that's more physically mature and, you know, who's been in a major college program, who's been in a major college weight room, you know, I think that's going to be big. And, you know, I'm hopeful that'll make a difference in a couple of these big games this year. So.
Appreciate it, Patrick.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks, Patrick.
We got Jim McCray coming up in a few minutes. We'll take a quick break, and we'll have him right back. Deuce McAllister, Bobby Hebert. Joining us now is Jim McCreath, author of the new novel, Ronaldo, A Tale of World Cup Soccer, Terrorism, and Love. He can be found at James S. McCreath. James, how you doing?
I'm fine, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing pretty good. And I guess the biggest topic right now, or when you think about the FIFA World Cup, is Germany.
Yes.
Not making it out of group play.
Man, the hell happened, Jim?
Well, you know, you got to blame it on the coach, I think. And they're not. I know the coach is never on the team, but he had some young players he left off that team, and they were needed desperately. He went with the tried and true guys, and they just I was worried about that from the beginning. There's a great young fellow called Leroy Sane that plays in England, and he's supposed to be the best dribbler in soccer, and he didn't even come to Russia. So I know it's the players on the field that their arrogance, perhaps, you know, overconfidence. I was shocked, and yet I wasn't, because you know, the Korean, they had nothing to lose, those fellas, you know, that beat them. The South Koreans, they had nothing to lose at all, and they played like it. And I think what it comes down to in close games like that is the keeper, the guy that's tending the goal. He played a sensational game and shut the door, and that's the way soccer is often. You know, that's what happened today. They ran it, and they're shooting. They were going wide. They were going over the net. So I wouldn't want to be in Germany tonight, I'll tell you.
Jim, in your new book that you highlight and talk about, just the passion for soccer and the World Cup, just give us if you can give us just a little preview or overview, and then also tell us where we can find your book at.
Oh, absolutely, well. Yeah. Okay, so basically, if you would imagine Washington, D.C. Being run by the generals and the Pentagon, and the National Guard being on the streets of Washington and arresting people and taking them away to jail and sometimes not letting them out. And the mothers of those people marching in front of the White House. In the meantime, Washington is holding the Super Bowl. Now, that's exactly what was going on in Argentina when in 1978, where the book is set. And the book is about two brothers. They lose their father when they're very young in a soccer riot over in England. And one of the brothers is a soccer prodigy, Ronaldo, who the book is named after, who happens to be my Italian uncle. He's not the guy from Portugal. It's spelled R-E-N-A-L-D-O, so it's not. I'm not writing it about him.
So you're not Cristiano Ronaldo?
No. I wish I was. I think, you know, he's hot. He's really hot. Probably the best player in the world right now, honest to goodness, for athletic talent. So anyway, one brother's a soccer star. The older brother is angry and restless. He gets seduced by his university tutorial professor into becoming a terrorist. So the two brothers' lives go straight down a path, and then they diverge in the scene like Washington. Buenos Aires is basically Washington, run by a military government, terrorism in the streets, murders, assassinations. They almost didn't get to hold the World Cup. But they did, and they win it. And meanwhile, the brothers fall in love with two very strong women. Ronaldo falls in love with a rock star, and, of course, Lanfranco, the other brother, falls in love with his tutorial professor who ends up being a terrorist. So there's lots going on. There's romance, there's soccer, there's terrorism, there's all kinds of things in there. So you can imagine the setting of this all going on in Washington, D.C., because Argentina is the most American of all the South American countries. They just happen to be in the World Cup.
Jim, where can people pick up your book at?
They can get it on Amazon. It's available in paperback and all the meat on your Kindle reader, on your phone, Amazon.com, and it's spelled R-E-N-A-L-D-O.
We're speaking with Jim McCreath at James S. McCreath. And Bobby has one question for you.
Yeah, now, Jim, when you look at, we follow American football.
I love it. I love American football.
You know, you look at the NFL, and listen, we're not worried about any hooligans. I mean, I'm like, God forbid if England ever plays Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, because they'd be checking passports. I mean, who's going to be allowed in the stadium if that was going to occur? But to me, just the passion of the countries and how the whole country shut down. Look at Argentina. Yeah. It looks like maybe they have a light at the end of the tunnel because they're moving on. But this is interesting to me. When you look at England playing Belgium and where England's at right now, they're going to try and end more than, five decades of disappointment since winning its only major title on the home soil, 1966?
Yeah.
I mean, looking like football or soccer was invented in England, and they've really been irrelevant. You look at the Premier League, it's unbelievable. But as far as the World Cup, England has been a major disappointment. What is your take of where they're at right now? And you mentioned Argentina also with Messi.
Yeah.
If he can actually not only achieve greatness with Barcelona, but to do some actually for his country.
Right. Well, you know, I'm a great American football fan. I used to be Fuzzy Thurston of the Green Bay Packers growing up. He was my favorite. I didn't want to be the Jim Taylor or Paul Hornung. I wanted to be Fuzzy Thurston. So, and I appreciate you gentlemen being former Saints, and I love the Saints and Drew Brees and everything you did. Mr. McAllister, you've got a lot of records going on, and Mr. Hebert, you've certainly, you're in the Hall of Fame, I know, for the Saints and New Orleans. So congrats to you gents on your careers there, and because I'm a huge football fan. I'm closest to Buffalo Bills, so I go to some Bills games, but they haven't been around for a while in the Super Bowl. But I haven't heard cheering in any sport in a long time the way the Argentine fans cheered when they scored that second goal and won the game and went through yesterday. I mean, it was just amazing to hear fans cheer like that. I mean, because to go from you know, tragedy of
being eliminated to like, oh, we're moving on.
Exactly. And in the opposite effect of what happened to Germany today. You know, they were arrogant. They went out and You know, and it was terrible. I was in England in 1966. I was 18 years old, and I was touring through Europe. That's where I got hooked on soccer, because there was a night in 1966 where Italy lost 1-0 to the North Koreans, and they were out of the tournament. And I was in Italy that night, and I lived through that night. And I never want to live through anything like that again. So England, very interesting. They what they've done is they started to use their young players. Okay, and there's a soccer writer called Paul Kennedy who writes for Soccer America out in California, and he wrote an article just tonight about the changing style of English soccer. They're using their younger kids. The younger kids are more confident. They aren't in that old mold of long ball. The English always used to do the long ball down the field and right into it, where the South Americans and the Spanish brought it to Europe. Beautiful passing game, flow, you know, where the English, maybe because of cold weather, they'd run.
Right.
They'd run under the ball, you know. But I think now what happens tomorrow isn't all that important, because they both have a softer a team to play when they go through. So they're playing for first and second place, and the bookies have England's chances of 35-1 to beat Belgium tomorrow, because I don't think they're going to chance either team going to chance getting anybody hurt. So
right.
I don't think tomorrow's game is a good mark. I don't think winning 6-1 helped England at all. Okay, I don't. Some of those goals were, you know, they were playing a very soft team, so I'm concerned about that. I am concerned about their keeper in particular, because he has not been tested, and that's always been the Achilles heel of the English. They've had great offensive teams, but the keeper lets in terrible goals. And once again, it's like that guy from South Korea today. He won the game for them. So
yes.
I'm hopeful for England because I'm part of the British Commonwealth and Canada. That's my heart and soul is with the England, but I'd be
Jim, I have to tell you right quick. Oh, that's a thorn in my side. I'm more Quebecois.
Oh, because, I love that. I knew that.
Because I was like Acadie.
The
Acadian, Acadie, come on, immigration, separating families. I mean, Nova Scotia.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm like, I'll go Belgium. I am anti-England. Sorry. But
Jim, I appreciate you.
Believe me, I like Belgium. I'm not stuck on England. I like Belgium. They're a good offensive team. They could be the best team in the tournament, but watch out for Croatia. They're sneaky.
Yes, Croatian.
They're sneaky guys, and they won with their substitutes yesterday. You know?
Croatians' mindset, that they're more like a part of Italy. You know, the old Yugoslavia and all, what happened in the 1990s with the Serbs and, and you know, payback and all that, going back to the Nazis and all that. No, it's amazing when you research what occurred with the Serbs and Croatians. All I know is, Jim, we're going to leave you with this, that I would not ever want to see the fan base if Croatia ever played Serbia. There's no
terrible
way they could be even near each other.
Well, that's what started the war. The war started. It started with the soccer game. Not many people know that. It was in Belgrade, and they had two teams, a Serb team and a Croatian team, were playing, and there was a riot at the end of the game, and that's what started. That was a straw that broke the camel's back. So I love the sociology of the sport, the different countries playing.
So much passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we surely appreciate you being able to come on, Jim McCreath, at James S. McCreath. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jance. All the best.
Yes, sir. And he has a new novel out, Ronaldo, A Tale of World Cup Soccer, Terrorism, and Love. We're going to take a CBS News break right quick. Deuce McAllister and Bobby Hebert are here for the next 30 minutes. Seth Dunlap will be joining you with double coverage, talking a little bit about Tyler Helinski, the former quarterback that was found to have severe CTE, having his brain described as a 65-year-old man. Talk a little bit about NBA free agency. That's all coming up with Seth from 8 to 11 tonight on double coverage. And tomorrow, myself, Bobby, and Christian will be at Walk-Ons in Metairie at the Clearview Mall. We'll have Coach Ed Orgeron, Coach Dave Aranda, Steve Ensminger, Coach Mickey Joseph, and we'll be on tomorrow from 4 to 8. It is free to everyone. The doors open at 3:30.
It's going to be a great atmosphere, Deuce. It's going to be, I mean, listen, I have a number of questions for Coach O, my ex-roommate, you know, if you look at it, we go back, you know, Deuce. Him and I won the state championship in 1977 at South Lafourche. I lived with him for 3 years. Come on, you live with somebody for 3 years. You know.
Were you cleaning up or he was cleaning up?
No, hell, I was the clean one. Come on, I'm the prima donna. I'm like the quarterback. I mean, come on, he's a lineman. I mean, you have to clean up after the lineman. So then you have Dave Aranda, you can have Mickey Joseph, and Steve Ensminger. Coach Ensminger and I go back to the 80s, you know, way back. Deuce, you know I had a football camp. I never told you this. You know you got the Manning Passing
right,
Academy?
Right.
I had a football camp in 1988 at St. Paul's in Covington called the Bayou All-Star Camp. Luis Gartino, an old Bonneville friend of mine from Northwestern, put this on. You know who I had come to that? John Stevens. Rookie of the year with the New England Patriots. He went to Northwest from Spring Hill. His daughter was just in the championship for the U.S. Open. You know, he died in a tragic auto accident.
Okay.
So I had this, you know, it's an overnight camp. You know, and I had Coach Ensminger came in. I want to say he was at Clemson then. Mm-hmm. This is like, look back, if I beat Georgia Clemson, it was way back in 1988. This is old school. And let me tell you, Coach O was there. He was at University of Miami. Let me tell you what Coach O did. And it kind of ticked off LSU fans.
Now, is this radio, can we
yes,
talk about this on the
yes,
radio?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
Because it's can you be a hired gun and you want them on your side?
Right.
Coach O ended up showing at my football camp at St. Paul's in Covington, the University of Miami National Championship highlight film. Come on, just like they didn't have any rules then.
Right.
So all of a sudden, Deuce, I'm getting coaches from all over the country. And then Louisiana said, well, you can't have that. So the NCAA, so they almost limited where you cannot cross state borders to have different coaches from all over.
Wow.
And Deuce, it was like a 1-2 year wonder how that things turned around.
Just that fast.
Because it's like to have coaches involved in an off-season football camp, because it's all about recruiting.
It's all about recruiting.
And Coach
Showing
O
your brand.
Was, listen, that's one thing.
You had a satellite camp, basically.
Yes. No one can never tell me that Coach O doesn't burn the midnight oil and get the players that it takes to win, or attempt to get the players and convince the mamas that I'm going to take care of your boy. I don't care if he's been in Miami, he's been in Syracuse, he's been in USC,
Tennessee,
Oxford, LSU. I know that he's going to be so convincing that you're gonna trust him and want your kid to play for.
It's the gumbo and rice. So we'll be out tomorrow at Walk-Ons in Metairie at Clearview Mall, and it'll be Coach O, Dave Aranda, Steve Ensminger, Mickey Joseph tomorrow from 4 to 8. It is free. First come, first serve. You got to get there early. Doors open at 3:30. Right now, Bobby, I think it is maybe the bottom of the fourth, and Oregon State has tied it up 1-1. They just hit a bomb.
Yeah, so they hit a bomb. No, that'll be interesting because I don't know. Just from
would you
know.
Want another SEC team to win it?
Okay,
because Florida won it last year. So would you want Arkansas to win it?
Yes, but this is what I'd want. I would not mind if you could tell me Arkansas is going to be national champs, but to be the best 2 out of 3, just to make it more intriguing.
I got you.
That Oregon State would somehow win.
Win it.
And to make it more significant, you know, all of a sudden, if Oregon State comes back and wins this game, it's bottom of the fourth, it's 1-1, wouldn't you like, man, whoa, this is on the line. This is it. 1-1, who's going to be national champs? So listen, I would love Arkansas to shut the door tonight.
Yeah.
But if you could tell me that it come down to like 2 out of 3, yes,
right.
I would definitely, because I would watch that.
Right. Because
then you intrigue with sports and how the players can handle that environment and that pressure.
I'm gonna squeeze Clarence in before we take a break. Clarence, what's going on, man?
Hey, just real quick, guys, Deuce, you're doing great, man. I just you're like a natural at all this.
I appreciate it.
Okay, and I'll set this up by saying it is a joke in advance, but gentlemen, do you know the difference between Germany if you've been watching the World Cup and
right.
the finals. What's the difference in Germany and a tea bag?
Germany and a tea bag, that's all. Is that a joke, or can you say it on the radio, Clarence? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can say that a tea bag stays in the cup a whole lot longer. Thank you, guys.
All right, Clarence.
No, Clarence.
He's picking on Germany because they've got knocked out.
Yeah, but that has not been the case.
No, not
Germany's
at all,
really. Been one of those teams that if you look at even post-World War II or just in the history of soccer, Germany's been dominant.
They're a dominant team, dominant
franchise. When you look at, okay, who do you perceive as dominant and who you want to be like? It'd be like Germany, Brazil, Argentina. Then obviously you look at like a Spain. Now, you know what's weird, Deuce, that I was telling you this before the show probably about 4 hours ago, is that this is an unusual World Cup. You know why? Because to even start the World Cup, now, from a local interest, United States is not involved.
Correct.
You got to earn your way. You're correct. Not given anything.
Trinidad and Tobago, correct?
But Trinidad and Tobago was, I think, 1.3 million people that made a World Cup until Iceland has like 330,000 people, and they made it. But the point I'm making, these two teams, and now three because Germany's out, I'm going to count Germany. It would be interesting going forward that when you talk about getting out of group play, who did not start the tournament and who's always been worldwide known countries to be significant, the Netherlands, Holland, and Italy, they didn't even make the tournament. Listen, we disappointed the United States, but that is a travesty that the Netherlands and Italy did not make the World Cup.
I say more so than Italy than the Netherlands.
No, the big orange. Let me tell you the orange. But Ajax and all that, the pro. Deuce, I'm telling you, trust me on this, that the Netherlands, they would be more like right now where Belgium's at.
Okay.
Or where Sweden's at, but they're not part of that. They got overtaken by those countries, and that's unacceptable in that region. Now, Italy, come on, if Spain's relevant, the Italians look at it, what, we're not relevant? No, dudes, that takes them off more than anything. So that's why I'm kind of intrigued. Who's going to come out on top? To me, who's turning things around? Watch out for Neymar and Brazil.
In Brazil.
Yes, you never can count out Messi in Argentina. I don't trust his teammates. But I would say right now with Germany being out, France, they got a lot of young players. They were almost like in Qatar or Qatar, however you pronounce it, when they're going to have the World Cup at night because it's so
correct.
Freaking hot in the
so
desert. That they were almost expecting them in 2022, but because of the talent, you can't count out France. But I still, right now, if I'm going to bet, Deuce, going forward where we're at right now, I would not go against Brazil.
I'm with you. When we come back, we'll have Jordan Schultz on. He's a Yahoo Sports Basketball Insider. Talk a little bit about the Pelicans and the NBA free agency. This is Deuce and Bobby on Sports Talk. Coming back, Deuce McAllister, Bobby Hebert on WWL 870. Right now we have Jordan Schultz with Yahoo Sports with us. He can be found at Schultz. _ report. Jordan, how you doing?
Hey, guys, doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. And I guess we'll go right with the Pelicans and see. I know Rodney Hood is a name of interest, but, you know, how does this thing with DeMarcus Cousins start to unfold with Gortat being sent over to the Clippers? What's that market looking like for him being able to either sign back with the Pelicans or will they work some type of sign and trade deal?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, before the injury, there was really no doubt that Cousins was going to get a year max. And then all of a sudden,
right.
New Orleans plays so well without him. And Davis plays like an MVP and they sweep Portland. And people start wondering, well, is New Orleans better off with DeMarcus? So I think there's really two options if they want to keep him. It's really one option if they want to keep him, which is which is probably like a 2-year deal, a kind of a prove it deal to see. And then you can ultimately say, well, maybe trading with Washington, for example, would be a good thing, and having a sign and trade. And so I'm not certain that the market for Cousins is as perhaps robust as it would be for your normal, you know, MVP caliber big man in his prime, just because his style is different. Now, I'm a big fan of the guy. I think he's incredibly talented, but he needs to go to the right team, the right fit. And that's a part of the reason why I think New Orleans has a little bit more leverage than they would have with, you know, another player of that caliber.
As they try to fill this roster out to be able to add some more firepower to it, is a guy like Rodney Hood going to be overpriced, or will there be a market for him with the Pelicans? And then a couple reports out there saying Rondo is looking for, I guess, about $8 to $9 million a year on 2-year deal. Is that something that you see the Pelicans being able to do as well?
I reported yesterday that there were really it's a 4-team race for Rodney Hood. It's Chicago, Indiana, Cleveland, obviously, and New Orleans. And I think New Orleans probably makes the least sense because of what you said financially and the fact that they have, you know, some good players on the perimeter, guys like Etuan Moore. I think Rondo is the number one priority for them, re-signing him, along with Cousins and figuring out that. But then you can start to think about a guy like Hood. And I know that New Orleans is interested in Hood. I just don't know if paying him at that level, even though he's 25, I'm not sure that will ultimately make sense, considering that Chicago or Indiana, for example, is going to have a ton of cap. And in the case of Indiana, he really does fill a significant need.
Now, Jordan, does this even come into play considering, you look, run and gun and how the Warriors are structured? You look to, I guess, the Pelicans and Coach Gentry. The reason why I bring this up, does this even come into play, the significance of what you achieve as far as on the defensive side of the ball? You look at AD, was named all-defensive first team for the first time in his career, and then he was also voted second team all-defense in 15 and 17. But the reason why I bring it up, you look all-defensive first team this season, but then also Drew Holiday was voted all-defensive first team. So, I mean, it's like, I don't know, there's five players. So you got two out of the five. Does that even come into play to maybe entice players to come to New Orleans, or is it all about the money, considering the level of how Drew Holiday finished the season and then AD where he's at?
Well, I mean, listen, if you're a Pelicans fan, you're ecstatic because you have, you know, in Davis, you have one of the best players in the world. In Holiday, you have one of the best two-way guards in the world who can play on and off the ball.
Right.
And that's how highly I think of Holiday. And if you ask people around the league, you know, he's a monster. I do a podcast with CJ McCollum. We've talked a lot about Drew and just how tough he is and physical. Guys want to play with those two guys. And they want to play with Rajon Rondo because of his passing. And obviously, he's a free agent. So, and New Orleans is trending upward. I mean, they're on the cusp of being really good, as you saw in the playoffs. Money is always dictates contracts or dictates where players go. But fit is really important, too. And that's why I think there are free agents that are going to look at New Orleans as a really attractive place, considering the youth of the team, the direction of the team, Alvin Gentry, and just the player development as a whole.
Speaking with Jordan Schultz of Yahoo Sports at Schultz_report, Jordan, is there any news to report really with Kawhi Leonard? You know, Magic has said that he'll step down if he doesn't get, you know, a big ticket free agent this year and next year. Does it look like Paul George is going to be staying in Oklahoma as well?
Well, I'll start with George. I still think Paul George ends up a Laker. I think I know there's been rumblings about Oklahoma City, and that's been, you know, I've heard that for a little while now. I just don't know if the Thunder make that much sense for him, given that, you know, I know he's comfortable playing second fiddle to Russell Westbrook, and he developed a good rapport there, but he can do the same thing in L.A., potentially with LeBron. You know, and he's from there. So I just think the Lakers for him is the most attractive and probably the most sensible destination. And obviously they have enough money, $70 million, to sign two max guys. So I think he'll end up a Laker, and I think LeBron will end up a Laker. I know you didn't ask that. In terms of Kawhi, you know, San Antonio's last resort is trading him. That's the last thing they want to do because right. They know how great he is, and they know that they're not going to get back 100 cents on the dollar. So I think that's the – I think he could be probably the last thing – if he is dealt, it'll be one of the last things that happens before the season. In other words, San Antonio's in no rush, and they don't have to trade him. If they do trade him, they could always wait during the season. So I'm fascinated by that just because it's so rare, and it's really the first time under the Greg Popovich regime that we've seen, you know, this kind of embarrassment publicly. It's almost it's totally unprecedented. Even LaMarcus Aldridge, they were able to work out.
Speaking with Jordan Schultz of Yahoo Sports at Schultz_report. Jordan, thanks for coming on with us, my man.
Hey, fellas, no problem. My pleasure. And one last thing about Cousins is, remember, New Orleans does have his bird rights, and they could go into the max or into right. into the luxury tax, which is worth noting. So it'll be interesting to see. It's a fascinating free agent market. Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. Thank you, Jordan. And that was one of the things that when you talk about being able to sign him, being able to go to have his bird rights. His bird rights are important because even long term, it sends you over to the luxury cap. But I mean, he's a player that if he's healthy, well worth it. And that wouldn't be on a short term contract. That would be on a long term contract.
Well, and Deuce, I just look at it that how do you keep AD happy? How do you keep AD happy and maybe take that next step and win at the highest level? I know he doesn't want to be the five. He wants to be that true power forward. He wants to be that four. And I think Boogie Cousins would keep him happy in that regard.
Well, you definitely keep him happy if you're able to bring in some more help with him.
Right.
I know, Bobby, we're going to go to you quick in wrestling. You want to talk World Cup right quick.
Hey, right quick, Bobby.
Yes.
I am a graduate of Central Lafourche High School at 67, first graduating class. But anyway, you know, Bobby, we in the USA, I don't think that we have taken the best group of people.
No, Bobby. I was talking to Deuce about this. If we had Deion Sanders and the best players, we'd be the World Cup champs.
Well, let me just tell you, okay? Just to let you know, my son and a lot of guys from Louisiana on the Olympic development team that could have stepped to the next level. We went to Oklahoma. It was Oklahoma, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida.
Bobby, I hate to cut you off, my man. We got to talk soccer tomorrow. Can you call tomorrow? We can talk a little soccer. I got to get out. We're about to go, and Seth may talk a little World Cup soccer with you.
Well, yeah, because bring that up, because the development of the U.S. going forward on the world scene.
I'm very familiar with the Olympic development team. This is Deuce McAllister. It's been great with you guys hosting. I'm going to turn it over to Bobby Aber and let him get us out of here.
Bonne nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.